Last week, we left off in the middle of everything. We were discussing the Rambam's position, which is based on many sources in the Talmud, that the Chachamim in every generation have the right to understand the Torah, to read in between the lines of the Torah, and to darshan the Torah Shemal Peh, the way they understand, and to ignore precedent. Just because in an earlier generation they understood one way, it's not binding on the later generations. That's the principle based on the pasuk, "Kabosal ha'shoifet ha'sheyeh b'yamim ha'heim." You come to the Chachamim who live in your generation. So the Chachamim comment, obviously you can't ask a person who's not alive. Are you going to go visit the grave? So obviously he must be referring to the fact that the psak of the Chachamim in your generation is binding, even though they clearly are less learned than the Rabbanim in an earlier generation. And this is the understanding, according to the Rambam, this is the understanding of the principle of Eilu v'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chaim. That when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah, this is the way the Ritva describes it in Erev, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, he told him that this is a black area, this is Osir, and this is a white area, this is Mutter, and this is a gray area. It has elements of Isir and elements of Heter, and he leaves it up to the Hachro, up to the final decision of the Chachamim in every generation based on their perspective of the entire Torah, of Kol HaTorah Kula, to give a Hachro on all of the gray areas. Now this principle of Eilu v'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chaim is very relevant halacha l'maisa. It's not just a philosophical concept. It's very actual in Shulchan Aruch in several places. For example, we have a rule, this happens to be an obscure din, but some of the dinim that I'll quote may be a little obscure, but these are real dinim in Shulchan Aruch. We spoke a few weeks ago of the principle of orla. If you plant a tree, so you're not permitted to eat the fruits that grow the first 3 years. So in the Chumash, the laws of Orla are only described in Eretz Yisrael. Chumash in Parshas Kedoshim says, Ki savoyu el ha'oretz. When you come to Eretz Yisrael, when the Taitim call it Tzmeichel va'araltim arlosai. And the Talmud points out that we have a halacha l'moshe misinai, which is a din deraisa also, that the laws of Orla apply even outside of Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Lortz. Despite the fact that Orla b'chutz Lortz is assumed to be min ha'torah, halacha l'moshe misinai, nonetheless, the Gemara says part of that halacha l'moshe misinai was that a safek orla is mutter. What constitutes a safek orla? If there's any doubt, usually we say whenever you have a safek in a din deraisa, safek deraisa l'chumra. But regarding safek orla, that's part of the halacha l'moshe misinai that you go l'kula. What would constitute a safek orla? So a safek would be, let's say a person doesn't remember when he planted the tree. Is it ready after the first 3 years? Is it still in the middle of the first 3 years? Let's say he bought an orchard from a goy, and he doesn't know when the goy planted it, and the goy himself doesn't remember. That would be considered a safek. Or I go shopping in the store, and I buy some fruits. And there's no way to ascertain now which farm they bought the fruits from. We don't know whether the fruits were grown in the first 3 years or after the first 3 years. On Eretz Yisrael, you're not allowed to go to the store and buy fruits. There may be orlo. In a chutz lo'aretz, you are permitted to go buy fruits, even though there's a possibility that it may be orlo. Safek orlo is muta b'chutz lo'aretz. So in the Gemara, it says that not only is a safek orlo muta if you don't know what the metzias is, you don't know what the facts are, even a safek in din is also muta. Let's say we have a machloikis, whether we should paskin that this is orlo or not. So even a safek in halacha is also considered a safek orla. All right, it's not so bad. But not only that, even if you have an instance where there's a dispute among the Chachamim, and the majority opinion is that it is orla, and only a minority view says that it's not orla. So usually the principle is that you follow the majority opinion. Achrei Rabban Lahatas, Apostak and Parshas Mishpatim. Whenever there's any shaila, you follow the majority opinion. So here the Gemara says, not so. Whenever there's a dispute, the issue of Orla applies both in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz Lortz. And this machloikis that we have regarding this tree or this bush, whether the berries or the fruits are Orla, applies equally to Eretz Yisrael and to Chutz Lortz regarding a certain case. It's the same shaila in Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Lortz. So this shaila, when it comes up in Eretz Yisrael, we paskin l'chumra, because it's a safek Orla, safek deraisa l'chumra. When it comes to Chutz Lortz, we paskin l'kula. And even in the instance where the majority opinion say l'chumra, the majority say that it is Orla, it's osar, and there's only a minority opinion. So the Gemara formulates a principle, kol ha-mekel ba'aretz. If there is an opinion, a minority opinion in Eretz Yisrael, l'kula, which is not accepted, because even if it would be 50-50, we wouldn't accept the kula opinion. Asaf agar l'Eretz Yisrael is also. Certainly more so if the majority opinion is l'chumra. So nonetheless, kol ha-mekel ba'oretz, if there's a minority opinion regarding Orla and Eretz Yisrael, so the klal is halacha kemosa b'chutz lorz. When it comes to chutz lorz, we paskin l'kula like the minority opinion. So how in the world does that make any sense? So there's a famous comment that's made by the Rabbi Nissim, the Ran, one of the Rishonim, commenting on the side of the Rif at the end of the first parak in Kiddushin, where the Ran explains that this is all based on the principle of Safek Orla B'chutz Lorz Mutar, that not only is it considered a Safek, if it's a Safek what the facts are, that's what we call a Safek in Metzius. Not only is it considered a Safek if it's a Shaila what the Din is, a Safek in Halacha, even if it's a question of halacha, and the majority opinion say lechumra, that it is orla, and there's a minority opinion that says lekula, that's also called a safik koldahu, that's called a slight safik. It's not a 50-50 safik, there are different degrees of safik. You can have a safik 50-50, then you can have a safik 60% lechumra and 40% lekula. So that's a slighter safik. Then you can have 90-10, then you can have 95-5, you can have 98-2. So if you have a slight suffix, even though it's 98-2, that's enough to be mekel b'chutz lorz. And even a machlekes in halacha, where the halacha is always gepaskin, we accept the majority opinion, it doesn't mean that the minority opinion is wrong. We say, eilu v'eilu divri l'kim chayim, we say that that's a legitimate, sometimes, we don't always say, eilu v'eilu divri l'kim chayim. Sometimes Bon Chacham just made a mistake. Sometimes you don't say, eilu v'eilu divri l'kim chayim. Let's say if it's a question of girsa, you don't know what the text says. So you can't say either the text is supposed to read one way, the text is supposed to read the other way. If you have a dispute among the Amoraim, what did the Tanoim mean when they made when they said a certain statement, when there's a line in the Mishnah? So you can't say Rav Meir or Rav Akiva either said one thing or he said the other. He didn't talk out of both sides of his mouth at the same time. So there you can't apply but in many instances, I wouldn't say most, in many instances you can apply that we consider areas of halacha as gray areas that have elements of mitzvah, elements of ptur, elements of chiyuv, elements of iser, elements of heter, a gray area of halacha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu leaves it up to the determination of the Chachmei HaTorah in every generation based on their perspective, total perspective of Kol HaTorah Kula. And we can see that this opinion has validity and that opinion has validity. Sometimes, many times you say, Eilu v'eilu divri l'kim chayim. So in a case like that, in an instance where you apply the principle of Eilu v'eilu divri l'kim chayim, although we would paskan like the majority opinion, Achirab Nahatos, we don't consider the minority opinion as incorrect. We say no, that it has validity. We just don't paskan like that. But with respect to Orlo b'chutz lorz, we would say that that would constitute a suffik koldu. At least it is a slight suffik. Maybe the din should be like that, and we would paskin l'kula. We'll take another example. There's such a similar formulation, practically the same terminology. Kol ha-mekel b'aretz halacha k'mosa b'chutz lorz is such a similar terminology appears in the Talmud with respect to the laws of Avelus. Now, the laws of Avelus in general is a big machlokes whether the laws of Avelus are deraisa or derabbanan. That's a machlokes in the Gaonim, in the Rishonim, and in the Shulchan Aruch. The Sfardim generally follow the opinions of Rabbi Yosef Karo, who's known as the Mechaber, the author of the Shulchan Aruch. So Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Mechaber, paskins like the Gaonim and the Chachmi Svara, the Sfardish tradition, that Avelus Yom Rishon is deraisa. If someone dies and is buried on the same day, so the observance of Avelus till the end of that first day is a din min haTorah. The rest of the Shivan, the rest of the Shloshim, and everything else is all midrabbanan. But the Avelus Yom Rishon, if it happens to be Yom HaMisa v'HaKvura, if the person is buried on the same day that he died, then the observance of Avelus till the end of the day would be min haTorah. And the Ramah follows the tradition of Rashi and Tosfos, the Chachmei Ashkenaz, that all of Avelus is only midrabbanan. There's no Avelus, that's min haTorah. What's the difference halacha l'maisa? We observe the dinim whether they're min haTorah or min derabbanan. So the difference halacha l'maisa comes up in the following instance, happens every year. Somebody dies on Simchas Torah in Chutz Lorz. Somebody dies on the last day of Pesach, which is only observed in Chutz Lorz. They die on that day and they're buried on that day. So min haTorah, according to the Mechaber, min haTorah you have to observe Avelus. Min derabbanan you have to observe Yontif. So what do you do when you have a conflict between a mitzvah min haTorah and a mitzvah min derabbanan? So the mitzvah min haTorah takes precedence. So Rabbi Yosef Kara writes, and that's what the Sfardim follow that opinion, if someone dies and is buried on the same day, so the observance of Avelus on the remainder of the day is min haTorah. So the relatives who have to observe Avelus, Shiva, would observe Shiva on Simchas Torah. They'd observe Shiva on the last day of Pesach and on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, because the Yontif is only Midrabbanan. In Eretz Yisrael, they don't have Simchas Torah, they don't have the last day of Pesach. And even the second day of Rosh Hashanah they do have, but it's only Midrabbanan. There's no second day of Rosh Hashanah Torah. So if you assume that the Avelus of Yom Rishon is Minat Torah, then one would observe Avelus Yom Rishon, one would observe Avelus even though it's Yontif. Everybody else is celebrating Yontif, and the Oval would be observing Avelus. But if one should assume, like the Ramot Paskins, that Avelus is all the Rabbanon, all of Avelus is only with the Rabbanon, even if it turns out to be the Yom HaMisa V'Hakvura, even if the person is buried on the same day that he died, so then everything is only the Rabbanon. So then the Gemara has the rule that the Yontif, the mitzvah of Simchas Yontif, takes precedence of, when there's a conflict between Yontif and Avelus. So the mitzvah of Simchas Yontif takes precedence over the mitzvah of Avelus, because Yontif is observed by the whole community, and Avelus is only observed by this one person. So the Gemara says the essay of the Rabbim, the mitzvah essay of Simchas Yontif of the whole community, takes precedence over the mitzvah essay of Avelus that's only observed by this one individual person. So getting back again, there is a question whether any of Avelus is deraisa. We happen to, I'm an Ashkenazi. Ashkenazim follow the opinion of the Ramah, of the Chachmei Ashkenaz. Rashi and Tosfos that all of Avelus is only with the Rabbon. But Sfardim follow the view of the Chachmei Svara, the Rambam and the Rif and the Gaonim, the Mechaber Paskins like that, that Avelus Yom Rishon is deraisa. And nonetheless, even though they are of the opinion that there is an institution of Avelus Yom Rishon that is deraisa, nonetheless, the din is that whenever there's a suffix in Avelus, you go lekula. Whenever there's any slight suffix, you go lekula. And even if the slight suffix happens to be not only a suffix in, I'm not sure about the facts, even if it is a suffix about the halacha, and again, even if the suffix about the halacha is not a 50-50 suffix, it's not that there's a machlekes haposkim, and 50 poskim hold like this, and 50 poskim hold like that. It's a machlekes haposkim 98-2. And 98 poskim hold lechumra, that one should observe avelus, and 2 poskim hold lekula. So the Gemara has an expression that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, halacha kedivra hamekel ba'ovel. When it comes to avelus, we always adopt the position lekula. So Tosfos quotes in the name of the Gaonim, Tosfos and Erevin quotes in the name of the Gaonim, that this is not because it's a din derabbanan. Even if the Gaonim are of the opinion that avelus yom rishon is deraisa, you still say halacha kedivra hamekel ba'ovel. So what is that based on? So that's similar to this din of Orla B'chutz L'Aretz. Even though one should assume that Orla B'chutz L'Aretz is Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, which means that it's a din deraisa, nonetheless, whenever there's any sofik kol dehu, and any slight sofik, the principle is that we go l'kula, kalameikal b'aretz, Halacha K'moshe B'chutz L'Aretz. If you have a machlekes 98-2, what the din is on such a shaila of Orla in Eretz Yisrael, so even though only 2 poskim out of the 100, 2% would be meikal, we would say, in Eretz Yisrael, we wouldn't follow that opinion, but in Chutz L'Aretz, we would follow it. That constitutes a suffix holder. That's a slight suffix. So the same is true regarding Avelus. Even if one should adopt the position that Avelus, Yom Rishon, is deraisa, if there's any instance where there's a machloikas haposkim, and the majority of the poskim hold that there is an obligation to observe Avelus, but there's a minority opinion, not a minority opinion, some crackpot holds like that. No, a minority opinion that constitutes Eilu V'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, not based on a misprint, and not based on a misunderstanding. Some person who's legitimate, he's entitled to an opinion, is of the opinion that you go l'kula. So the halacha says that halacha k'divra meikol b'ovel. And these dinim are based on the premise that Eilu V'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chayim, that whenever you have a machloikis in the gray area, we don't assume that the opinion that's outvoted is wrong. We say, no. How do you pass on halacha l'maaseh? You have to figure it out. But the opinion that's rejected, the 2% view that has been rejected, is not assumed to be an error. We say, no, that they were both entitled to their opinion, and there is something there. And when we are following the other view, the majority view, there's still, in the back of our minds, there still is a suffix called who, that maybe the others are right.
How do you explain the fact that Rabbi Caro Paskin the other way, that on the second day of Yontif, that the first day...
That one does observe Avil. Oh. That's a good question. This question was a machlekes, whether one if somebody dies and is buried on Simchas Torah, do the relatives observe Avelus or not? So before Rabbi Kara wrote his Shulchan Aruch, there was already a dispute. So why did he paskin l'chumra? Why did he paskin l'chumra if he have such a rule that halach k'divra meikal bavel? It was more than 98-2. It was sort of 50-50. So that's another thing. Let's say I come to Rav Moshe Feinstein, I come to Rav Soloveitchik, and I ask him a shaila in Hilchas Avelus. And they have their own opinion on the matter. They hold l'chumra. So are they bound to Paskin Lekula because they know that 98% of the Rabbanim disagree with him. So no, the din is that no. If I have my own personal opinion, whether Lekula Lechumra, I express my opinion. I'm obligated to express my honest-to-goodness opinion. And whoever is, now, the people who come to ask me the shaila, it depends. Are they my Talmidim, that they always follow my Psokim? Are they Balabatim in my community who always ask me all the shaila, so they have to follow my opinion on the matter? If they're not my Balabatim, someone calls me up on the phone and asks me, what's the din? I happen to have an opinion, Lechumr. But there are opinions, Lekula and Lechumr, so I'm not supposed to tell him, I hold its Osir and slam down the phone. I have to tell him, look, there are opinions, Lekula, Lechumr, so you have a right to be Mekel, if it's Avelus or if it's Orla B'chutzlos. But if I have my own opinion, I have to follow my own opinion. So Rabbi Yosef Karo followed, we'll have to discuss that also, it's not today, it's some later point. Rabbi Yosef Karo felt that he was a Talmud, he lived in the 1500s, and these Rishonim lived in the 1100s, in the 1000s. He felt that he was a Talmud of those Rishonim. He didn't feel that he was a Talmud of Rashi and Taisa. He felt he's a Talmud of the Rif and the Rambam. A Talmud, that's what all the Sfardim consider themselves, Talmidim of Rabbi Yosef Karo, and Talmidim of the Rambam and the Rif, and the Ashkenazim consider themselves Talmidim of Rashi and Tosfos. So the principle is that every Talmud is supposed to follow the Psokim of his Rebbe, unless he has his own original opinion, unless he feels so convinced that the Rebbe made a mistake. But if he's presented with a machlekes, my Rebbe holds like this, and the other Rabbeim hold like that, so even if it's 98-2, still, I have to follow my Rebbe. Every Talmud is mechuyev to follow his Rebbe. So that's where Rabbi Yosef Karo...
It's only a theoretical question then. I mean, if you are anyway bound to follow a particular Rebbe's psak, then what difference does it make whether it's Lekula or Lechumra?
What if a person doesn't have any particular Rebbe? We have shailas come up all the time, and a person is not my particular student. He just calls me up. He thinks that he's going to get the same answer from any Rebbe. I happen to hold Lechumra. So I'm not supposed to tell him Lechumra. I have to tell him 98% of the poskim hold the chumer, but 2% hold the kulas. And hilchas avelus, you have a right to be mekel. And the dinam avar lebechutz lords, you have a right to be mekel. It is relevant. It's relevant and comes up in other areas of halacha as well. The Gemara has the following concept. Some people made a mistake. They thought that this was a new. Maybe we could fix the loudspeaker again. What do you have to do? Move one away from the other. What was the secret? They're too close to each other, right? No, I think just move them away from each other. That was the solution last time. Move the chair away. Oh, okay. There is a concept that appears in the Talmud that whenever there is a dispute, let's say there's a dispute among the Chachamim, and 90% or 95% hold that something is mutter, and 5% hold that something is osur, and we pass them like the 95% that it's mutter. Is there a midas chasidus to be machmer? You're not obligated to be machmer. Would it constitute a midas chasidus to be machmer like the minority opinion? Or do you say, no, that's not the din. Why should you be machmer? So in the Mishnayos you have, it's not a 20th century invention. People think that the Chafetz Chaim invented this concept. Chafetz Chaim in his Mishnah Brura introduced it in many more cases than was known of before, but he didn't invent the concept. The concept appears in Mishnayos. There is a midas chasidus to be machmer for the minority opinion. Or the reverse, let's say 95% of the post can say that something is osur. Osur, osur. So we're stuck, whether it's a dim in atar, dim in rabbah. If 95% say that it's osur, so we follow the 95%. Unless we're talmidim of the 5%, let's say we're not. So we follow that opinion. And 5% legitimate post can 5% hold that the thing is mutter. But we're faced with a very difficult circumstance where it's a tremendous shas atchak, a hefsid meruba. So then in the Talmud you have klolim that sometimes b'shas hatchak we are entitled to follow the minority opinion. So how could that be? The din changes b'shas hatchak. What kind of a religion is this? So the commentaries explain. It's all based on the principle of eilu v'eilu d'rilikim chaim. Even though the 5% was not accepted l'halacha, the 5% who was machmer, the 5% who was mekel, is not the accepted opinion because they were outvoted by the 95%, but we don't say that the 5% were wrong. We say that there is legitimacy to the 5%. When we learn their opinions, it doesn't constitute bittul Torah. That's what we spoke about a few weeks ago. It doesn't constitute bittul Torah, but we don't pass them like that l'halacha. But sometimes it would make sense to be machmer like that. It would constitute a midas chasidus because it is a suffix called the who. It's not a sufficient suffix to say, well, you got to be machmer. It's not a 50-50 suffix. 95-5, so the Torah says achir rab lahatus. But still, since there is a 5% opinion that says that the thing is osur, so it would constitute a midas chasidus to be machmir, depending on what level of observance. If a person is just barely keeping kashrus and Shabbos and Taras HaMishpacha doesn't make sense that all of a sudden they should jump up to observe Midas Chasidus and to be machmir for all this. Let them first observe the rest of the laws of the Torah. That's like the Talmud has a mashal amad of a daima. What a woman is beautifully dressed with a nice dress and a nice hairdo and everything is nice. Then she puts on jewelry, then it looks good. If the woman is wearing a sloppy bathrobe, then she's going to put on jewelry, it'll look ridiculous. It's better not to put on the jewelry. So it doesn't make sense sometimes. It doesn't make sense to observe Midas Chasidus if one is not observing the basic dinim of the Torah. But let's say a person is a very observant person, medaktik and everything. And then he wants to volunteer to observe Midas Chasidus to be machmer on the 5% shita luchumer that's not accepted. So we say, yeah, that makes sense. Eloviyele divi lekim chayim. It does constitute a Midas Chasidus to be machmer for the minority opinion. And there is such a concept in the Talmud. It's a question how far you go with this concept. Then b'shas hatchak, the rabbanim have a right to be makel like the minority opinion, even though it's outvoted. You have a right to be makel like the minority opinion because we don't say that it's absolutely wrong. We say that there is a slight suffix called the rule. So this idea of Eilu B'Eilu D'Eilu Kim Chaim is even quoted Halacha L'Maisa in Shulchan Aruch. There are more cases also. There are more cases also.
Kitnius on Pesach,
that's another story. No, Kitnius is a minhug. We have dinim that are min HaTorah, then we have dinim that are min HaRabbanon. Our whole series is about dinim min HaTorah, Torah Shebichsav, Torah Shebal Peh. So just to put this into proper perspective, you have dinim min HaTorah and dinim min HaRabbanon, then you have minhugim. So just like there's a rule, one is not permitted to be machmer on a din de rabbana to the same extent as a din de araisa. If one will observe all the chumras de araisa on dinim de rabbana, that'll be a violation of baltaisif. You're not allowed to add on dinim de rabbana to the same extent as a din de araisa. So to minhogim, one is not permitted to be machmer on a minig to the same extent as a din de rabbana. So that's why if it's wartime or shnas batzoris, there's no food, and people are going to go hungry, so then the rabbana would always be mekel on the kitnias. So any slight sickness, they would say, you don't even need to be sick enough to be mater anisa de rabbanon. To be mater kitnias, which is only a minig, is less. Let's say waiting between fleishiks and milchiks 6 hours. That's a minhug. So if a person has a slight condition, he doesn't have to wait 6 hours, but he has to wait 1 hour. 1 hour is a din de rabbanon. If he's really sick to the extent that he can't function, he has to lay down in bed. No sakana, no, not going to die. No chance he's going to die. But he's so sick that it affects his ability to function normally, so then he doesn't even have to wait the 1 hour. But he's not allowed to eat real basa b'chol of their rice unless he's mamash achol mesukan. If he's sick in the hospital and the doctors say there's a chance he may lose his life, unless he eats basa b'chol of their rice, so then we're mata basa b'chol of their rice. So there are different levels. You have dinim deraisa, dinim derabbanan, and minhagim. And to what extent do you need a shas hadchak to be mater minig? Less of a shas hadchak than you need to be mater anisa derabbanan, which is much less of a shas hadchak that you need to be mater anisa deraisa.
Does Rambam ever use the term midas chasidus? Because in the Mora he seems to put it down.
The Mora, the Rambam puts down. I'm not familiar.
When he talks about hashkacha parti, and he says like foolish chasidus.
There are foolish chassidim, right? The Gemara talks about a chassid shota. The Gemara talks about that. But the Talmud speaks about midas chassidus.
But does Rambam in the Mishnah Torah?
Pretty sure he does. Yeah, pretty sure he does. Sure. For sure he does. Midas chassidus is sometimes a positive thing, and sometimes a chassid shota is a negative thing. So this concept of availability of the kachayim is very important concept. This is all based on the assumption. Last week we developed the two opinions. We spoke about the two views. All of the Midrash HaTorah and the Drash Hashem, which the Chachamim views in all the generations to establish the Torah Shebal Peh, all the halachas, all the drashas, are they mechadish dinim based on those Midrash HaTorah and the Drash Hashem? Or no, all the dinim already given to Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai. And these Midrash HaTorah and the Drash Hashem are just a check to make sure that we haven't made a mistake in the oral tradition. So he said the Rambam quoted that second opinion, and he rejected it. He said he thinks that that's not correct at all. And Rabbi Hirsch thought that that was the more correct opinion. But that's not the generally accepted opinion. Generally accepted opinion is the way the Rambam writes, that the Chachamim in every generation had the right to use the Midrash HaTorah and the Drash Hashem to develop new halachas in the Torah Shebal Peh. And that's why we assume that there's such a concept as Eilu V'Eilu D'Eilu Kim Chaim. If you would say that everything was given to Moshe Rabbeinu from A to Z, everything was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, and the midas are just to check to make sure that you got it straight, that there's no error in transmission, so how can you say Eilu V'Eilu D'Eilu Kim Chaim? Everything was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. And all the machloikis are simply a mistake, that somebody over the generations made a mistake. So it's all a mistake, so you can't say Eilu V'Eilu. So the halachas, The halachas bear out the Rambam. In Shulchan Aruch, many times the halachas bear out the Rambam's opinion. The Midrashim, in quite a few places, you have about 10 different sources in Midrashim where they use an expression that says, "Kol Masha Talmud Vasik Osid Lachadesh," anything that a sharp Talmud will be Mechadesh in a later generation, was already Nemol Ola Moshe Misinai.
Where does it say that?
If you want to find all the sources where it's quoted, the Netziv, in his introduction to the Shiltis, gives you, or he gives a tremendous baki. So he gives you around 5 of the sources, and then in the new editions, they give you on the footnotes the rest of the sources. Maybe bring that in next week. I'll try to remember to bring it in. So there is such a line that appears in the Midrashim. Kol Masha Talmud Vasik Asid Lachadesh, and one version is Asid Lahoros. The Netziv talks about those two versions. Asid Lachadesh or Asid Lahoros, anything that any Talmud, any Chiddush that a Talmud over the sharp Talmud, who knows what he's talking about, will be Mechadesh and Din, was already Nemol Ola Moshe Misinai. So Rabbi Hirsch understood that, like those the opinions that the Rambam was rejected, he took it literally, that every single Din was told to Moshe Rabbeinu at HaSinai. So what is left for the later generations? Nothing, just to make sure that you transmit it properly. And it's generally assumed that that's not what it means. What it means, kol masha talmud vasik, osa l'chadish nemo l'ala moshe misina, you have to add on one word. I mentioned the book, there's a Sefer HaChulin that's called Dor Revi, by the oldest great-grandson of the Chassam Sofer, who was the first great-grandson to be named after the Chassam Sofer Moshe. His name is Rabbi Moshe Glasner. He was a Rav in... in Hungary. He was a Rav in a Hungarian community. And he, in the introduction to his Sefer Dor Revi, that's his whole Yichus, he's the Dor Revi to the Chassam Sofer, in the introduction to his Dor Revi, has a long essay on the development of the Torah Shebal Peh. So when he quotes this Medrash, this expression for the Medrash, he just adds on one word, Kol Masha Talmud Vasik Asal Chadash Nemo Lola Moshe Misinai B'Koach. Everything was included potentially because the Midrash HaTorah Reshes Bohem were given to Moshe Rabbeinu, and using the Midrash, you can derive everything, you can read everything in between. Everything was given, not every single din, absolute every single din. He had the potential to darshan everything. That's the way it's always assumed, and he gives a Moshe L'ma'adav Adayim. When you make an airplane, or you make a fax machine, or a telephone, or any new invention, everything was there in Sheshes Mei Breshes B'Koach. There weren't fax machines, there weren't airplanes, but they just put together a few principles of physics, and they, after applying all of it, all or a few principles of chemistry, or in medical development, put together a few principles of biology, and they come up with a cure for a disease. So it's not something new. Kol Masha Reifei Mumche Asid L'Chadesh was already included in Sheshes Mei Breishes. Ivan never had all these penicillins and everything. Then he says, but is there, everything was there b'koyach, everything was there potentially, because all the rules and regulations were there. You're just combining rules together and you're putting them together. That's the way it's usually assumed. And they usually give, in the Sfarim, they give this Moshe L'ma'adav Adayma. I think in the secular literature they have such a Moshe, that they once showed Euclid a bridge, and they said that this bridge was built based on Euclidean geometry. So he looked at the bridge and he says, what does it got to do with my geometry? So he said, based on the theorems that you developed, one theorem leads to another theorem, leads to another theorem, leads to another theorem. All the theorems in geometry, everything is, if you have a rigorous proof for everything, so you have millions and millions of theorems, and then you can make a bridge based on that. So everything is b'koyach. Whatever Euclid developed, so included in that, potentially, b'koyach was all the later theorems that are going to be developed. And Mimela, this was all included in the bridge, was based on the Euclidean geometry, b'koyach. In fact, that's the simple reading of the Gemara in Menachos on Daf Chav Tes and Beis. The Gemara tells a story. We'll have to get to the context of this story a little later in our talks. The Gemara tells a story that HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe Rabbeinu the figure of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is giving a shiur. And Moshe Rabbeinu is sitting at this in the 8th row or something and paying attention to the shir. And the Gemara gives the whole story. Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai writing the Sefer Torah. So the Rabban Shalom tells him to put tagim, to put crowns on some of the letters. So he says, what do you need all these crowns for? So he says, you don't know, but in a later generation there's going to be a great scholar, Rabbi Akiva, and he's going to learn out dinim from all these crowns, from all the tagim. And every tag, he's going to be mechadish dinim. So Moshe Rabbeinu was fascinated. So he said, show me what it looks like. So Rabban Shalom has him sit in the shir and he's listening to the shir. And the expression by the Talmud uses is that Toshash Kocho, Moshe Rabbeinu felt very faint. He thought that this is a total distortion of the Torah. There's no similarity living and dead to the Torah that he gave to Bnei Yisrael at HaSinai. So he's saying over dinim, terminology, concepts. He never heard of any of that. So he thought that over the generations they're distorting the Torah. So then, finally, one student asked Rabbi Akiva, in this vision that he sees, one student asks Rabbi Akiva, and what's the din in such a case? He tells him the din. He says, how'd you figure that out? So he says, I didn't figure that out. That's a halacha l'Moshe Misina. So then the Talmud says that the Nisyashva Daita, Moshe Rabbeinu calmed down, he realized that it's not a distortion of the Torah. It's just that from generation to generation, they're developing one din based on another din, based on another din, like the Euclidean geometry. Moshe Rabbeinu gave the Midrash HaTorah and the Drash Hashem. And over the years, they developed one din based on another din, and everything was included. Kol Ma Shetalmid Vasek Asel Lachadish, everything was included, B'Koyach, in what Moshe Rabbeinu was given. So we said, getting back to the main principle, the Rambam is the main opinion, that's the one that's accepted, Allah HaLamayis and Shulchan Aruch. The Rambam's opinion is based on Gemara, both Talmud Bavli and Talmud Yerushalmi. We spoke last week about the Nisach HaYayin, the form that the Nisach HaYayin had in the second Beis HaMikdash was totally different from the way it was done during the first Beis HaMikdash, and that's the halacha. The Chachamim in every generation, they didn't follow the precedent. I, for 410 years, and the Bais Rishon, they did the Nisach HaYayin differently. It's an Ishkan Kasha. The Chachamim in the second period of the second temple have the right to read the Psukim in Chumash the way they see fit, the way they understand it, and there's nothing wrong. That's the principle of Eilav Yeladi V'Lekim Chaim. So the question is, how come in the Talmud you don't find Amoraim disagreeing with Tanoim? Whenever an Amora makes a statement and they say, but how can he say that? It's against the Mishnah. So the Gemara says, he's taka right. So the Mishnah says the din, and the Amora is wrong. Tiufta. The Amora is wrong, it's against the Mishnah. So why is he wrong? If every generation you have a right to disagree with the previous generation, you're not bound by the precedent, so why can't the Amoraim disagree with the Tanoim? So we mentioned last week the Kesef Mishnah, the commentary by Rabbi Yosef Kara on the side of the Rambam in the beginning of Hilchas Mamrim. He says, Nachinami, the Amoraim could disagree with the Tanoim. And we find instances in the Talmud. We mentioned last week that Rabbi Chana Vassaman asked this of Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, and he said, yeah, the Amoraim may disagree. Then you may disagree with the Tanoim. Just because you come in a later generation, you may disagree. In case anyone is interested in looking it up, we mentioned last week the fancy kasha that Rabbi Chana Vassaman asked Rabbi Chaim. It's in the Shiurim of Rabbi Chana Vassaman. On Maseches Baba Basra, each essay has a number, so this is number Tof Reish Lamed Gimel. So basically, the Amoraim may disagree with the Tanoim. Just if they weren't 100% convinced of their opinion, and they saw all the Tanoim disagreed, so they would give in. So okay, so nisht. So they'd give in that it's not so. But if they were really convinced of their opinion, they couldn't see the view at all, then they would disagree with Tanoim also, and they had the right to disagree with Tanoim. Just on this point, I'll divert a little bit till we continue. If you're interested in looking in the Torah Tamimah's commentary on Chumash, he has on the pasuk Bes Hanefesh Asher Oseh B'choron in the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands Avraham Avinu to move to Eretz Yisrael. So it says he moved with all of his wealth, with all of his behemoths, and all of the people on Nefesh Asher Oseh B'choron. So the Nefesh Asher Oseh B'choron, the simple pshat, means all of the servants that he purchased, all of the people who worked for him, that he owned. Nefesh Asher Oseh means Asher Konu B'choron, all the property that they had purchased. And the rabbis of the Talmud understood another level of interpretation. Nefesh Asher Oseh B'choron refers to the Gerim, that Avram was Megayeris Anosh and Mesorah Megayeris Anosh. So the Torah Tmima on that post, it quotes a comment from the Talmud. You don't need a Torah Tmima, but it's easier to find. If you have a Torah Tmima, it's easier to find. So the Talmud had a tradition that the world is going to last with, the rabbis of the Talmud had a tradition, the world is going to last for 6,000 years. And the 6,000 years are broken down into three units of history, 2,000, a 2,000, a 2,000. The first 2,000 years is Tohu. It's a waste, nothing good going on. The next 2,000 years is Torah. And the last 2,000 years is Yemos HaMashiach. Rabbi Akiva was not aware of this tradition. Rabbi Akiva lived, the Second Temple was destroyed about the year 70. So Rabbi Akiva lived about 70 years after the destruction of the Second Temple. So he thought that just like there were 70 years in between the Churban Bais Rishon and the Binyan Bais Sheni, the 70 years of Golus Bavel, so he thought based on Pesukim in Novi, he thought the same was going to be so there would be a pause, there would be a gap of 70 years between the Churban Bayis Sheni and the Binyan Bayis HaShlishi. So he thought Mashiach is going to come. He lived just the end of the 70 years after the destruction of the Second Temple, around the year 140. He thought Mashiach is going to come. So he was looking around, who's a good candidate? They had a search committee. Who's a good candidate to be Mashiach? So he decided Bar Kochva. So that's why he supported Bar Kochva's revolt, and he thought Bar Kochva was the Melech HaMashiach. His real name was Bar Kuziva, Shimon Bar Kuziva. And the reason why he called him Bar Kochva, that's a nickname, is because Darach Koichav Meyankiv. The Pasuk in Bolok speaks about the coming of Mashiach. It says Darach Koichav Meyankiv, that Melech HaMashiach will come like a shooting star. So he thought that Bar Kuziva is going to be the Melech HaMashiach. And the other Tanoim disagreed with Rebbe Akiva, and they said, not a chance. They said, you're going to be pushing daisies, you're going to be dead and buried for many years, and Mashiach will still not be here. Yalu asavim bilchayecho, grass will be growing on your cheeks. In other words, you're going to be in the cemetery, buried. Badain ben David lebo. Mashiach, how did they know Mashiach is not going to come for a long time? How did they know Mashiach is not going to come? Maybe he's going to come. We assume that chakelo b'chol yom. We think that there's a 50-50 chance Mashiach can come any day. How did the other Tanaim know that Rebbe Kiva was wrong? So they told them, we have a tradition that the history of the world is divided into three units. 2,000 years Tohu, nothing happening. 2,000 years Torah. And 2,000 years Emos HaMashiach. And the Mashiach is not going to come before the year 4,000, Lebriya Solom. And the year 4,000 corresponds roughly to the year, what does it correspond to? To the year 240. And counting that, and now it's 1998. So in that Cheshbon, 1998, so the year 4,000 in the Jewish calendar corresponds to the year 240. Rabbi Kiva lived in the year 140. He lived 100 years before the year 4,000. So the other Tanaim said that it's too early. Mashiach is not going to come. It's going to take a long time till Mashiach is going to come. It's interesting, the Rekeach writes in his commentary on Chumash. The Rekeach is one of the Bali Ataisis, one of the Rishonim. So he writes in the opening Pasuk, Bereshis Bor Elokim Es HaShamayim Es HaOretz, that Pasuk has six, the letter Aleph appears six times. He says he thinks that maybe that's the remez, maybe that's the allusion in the Chumash to the 6,000 years. The letter Aleph represents Aleph, 1,000 years. He says maybe that's where they got this idea from. Or maybe that's where they got the idea from. Maybe that's a remez to the idea that Bereshis Bor Elokim, when God created the world, He created the world, that it should last for 6,000 years the way we know it now. Anyway, the Talmud says that the breakdown of the 6,000 years is 2,000 years Tohu, and 2,000 years Torah, and 2,000 years Emos HaMashiach. So the Gemara says, what happened in the year 2000? What Torah? Moshe Rabbeinu, what Har Sinai? That was way later. What happened in the year 2000? So the Gemara says, what happened was, if you take a look in Bereshis and Noach, and you see Adam Arishon had a son, Adam, he had a son, Shes, and he had a son, Canaan, Enosh, Mahalalo, Yered, you go throughout all the generations, figure out how old was Adam Arishon when his son was born. How old was Shes when his son, Canaan, was born? How old was his son? So you calculate this plain arithmetic on a piece of paper. Your children, your grandchildren can make the cheshbon. It's not so complicated. So Avraham Avinu was born in the year 1948. That's what it says. He was born 1948, Lebriya Solom. So then the rabbis had a tradition. When Avraham Avinu was aged 52, that's when he started preaching monotheism to the world. That's HaNefesh Asher Asa B'charan. That was the year 2000. That's the tradition that the rabbis had. The 2,000 years Tohu, that the world was a waste, that there was nobody believing in monotheism, that terminated when Avraham Avinu started to preach. As long as he only believed in monotheism, but he didn't preach it to the public, so the world is still in a state of Tohu. But once Avraham Avinu starts preaching monotheism to the public, HaNefesh, Rosh Bacharon, he's preaching to many, many people. So that's the start of the 2,000 years, Shnei Alafim Torah. So the Shnei Alafim Torah go from the year 2000, when Avraham Avinu starts teaching HaNefesh, Rosh Bacharon, till the year 4,000. The year 4,000 corresponds roughly to the year 240. What happened in the year 240? That's the end of the Torah. What happened in the year 240? What, after the year 240, nobody's studying Torah? It's 1998 and we're still studying Torah. The men, the people, the women are studying Torah, the men are learning Torah. There are more people learning Torah now than there ever was in the history of the world. So what do you mean, after the year 240, nobody's learning any more Torah? So the Maharsha, in his commentary on his comments on the Gemara, raises this issue. What do you mean? Shnei Alafim Torah, and then Shnei Alafim Emos HaMashiach, no more Torah. But what about me? The Maharsha asks, what about me? I'm still learning Torah. What about Rashi, Tosfos, everybody in the Gemara? Oli Amaroyim. Everybody was after the year 240. So he suggests that it doesn't necessarily mean that the Torah is restricted to those 2,000 years. He says, no, we're going to continue to learn Torah till the end of the history of the world. It means that Mashiach can't come before. It just means that Shnei Alofim Osa Mashiach, the possibility of Mashiach coming begins from the year 4000, begins from the year 240. It doesn't begin before the year 240. But it doesn't mean that Shnei Alofim Torah didn't begin before the year 2000. Before Avraham Avinu was preaching monotheism, it was Olam HaTohu. It was Tohu. But after the year 4000, it's still Torah. That's how the Marsha says. Others assume that it's not so, because the Gemara seems to be giving a strict breakdown. It says, no, 2000 and 2000 and 2000. So that's why the Torah Tmima, in his commentary on Chumash, on that Pasuk on Nefesh HaShoah, so the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha, suggests that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the one who edited the Mishnayos, he was the end of the period of the Tanoim, he died approximately in the year 220. So he suggests that the year 240 corresponds roughly to the dividing line between the Tanoim and the Amoraim. So he suggests maybe that's what it means, that anyone who came after the year 240 doesn't have a right to disagree with those who came before. We're saying that in every generation, every Bezna has a right, every Rav in every generation has a right to read the Torah Shemal Peh, to understand, to read in between the lines the way he understands it, based on his perspective of Kala Torah Kula. And even later Chachamim have a right to disagree with the earlier Chachamim. So the Torah Tmimah suggests, yeah, maybe it's like this. Maybe the Ramuah said in Choshe Mishpot, we mentioned last week, the Ramuah said in Choshe Mishpot that if someone in the 1500s thinks that someone in the 1200s and the 900s made a mistake, he has a right to disagree. If someone in the year 230 disagrees with someone in the year 100, in the year 50, he has a right to disagree. But no one after the year 240 has a right to disagree with the psak that was mekubal before the year 240, because that's the Shnei Alofim Torah, and after the Shnei Alofim Torah are up, the Torah is on a lower level in the later generations, and you can't disagree. This is a suggestion. That's what the Torah Tmima quotes. Most of the Torah Tmima is not original. Most of it is quoting from earlier writings. That's his suggestion. So we show that that's not so. We just quoted from Bachana Vassman, from the Kesem Mishnah, from Rab Chaim Soloveitchik. It's not so. The Amoraim do have the right to disagree with the Tanoim. So what is the significance? What is the relevance of making such a statement, the Shnei Alofim Torah, that after the Shnei Alofim Torah are up, somehow everything is on a lower level and something changed? What changed? What changed in the year 240 that wasn't there before? The Marsha says nothing changed. He just says that Shnei Alofim Osa Mashiach didn't begin earlier. But he says the Torah continues. The Marsha says that nothing changed. But the Chazon Ish has an essay about this, a brief essay, in his Sefer on Yerideya, when he speaks about Hilchos Treifos, he raises the problem that some of the conditions that the rabbis of the Talmud consider as treifa today are not treifas. The animal is not going to die. And other things that today are absolutely devastating diseases that an animal can have, the Talmud says are not treifas. It's nothing in the Talmud, not nothing. Some of the descriptions of treifas don't correspond to the way things are today. So we assume that circumstances change. In the days of the Chachamim it was so, and the later generations have changed. So why is the din the way it says in the Talmud? Why shouldn't we paskin the din according to what the circumstances indicate today? So sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. So the Chazon Ish throws out this idea. He says, he thinks that this concept of Shnei Alofim Torah means that whenever there's a halacha that has to be nikva, whenever it's up to the Chachamim to determine the nature of a din, all the kviyas, all of the establishing new concepts in the halacha have to be made within those Shnei Alofim Torah. And the later Chachamim, after the year 240, had no right to establish new concepts. They have a right to disagree in details with the Chachamim who preceded. We find Amoraim who did disagree with Tanoim. And we paskin like that. When the Gemara says that Rav disagrees with all the Tanoim, there's no one who agrees with him. Whenever the Gemara says Rav Tanu Hu Palag, we paskin like Rav. You see, we do have a right. The Amoraim do have a right to disagree with the Tanoim. And we paskin like Rav when he disagrees with the Tanoim. But he's arguing with the Tanoim in details. So the Chazon Ish says, you don't find Amoraim developing new concepts in halacha, new categories of thought. The halacha was, the Torah was frozen in a certain sense. It keeps on developing, in every generation, developing in details. But it doesn't, you can't develop any new halachic categories of thought and new concepts after the Shnei Alofim Torah. But that's what he writes. Just to give a mashal to understand this, take for example the Pasuk gives us the laws of Shabbos. Torah says you're not permitted to do malacha on Shabbos. You're also not permitted to do malacha on Yontif, but there are heterim of oichal nefesh on Yontif. So the laws of Yontif are not as strict as the laws of Shabbos. Then we have the laws of Chol HaMoed, which are very vague, in the Chumash extremely vague. And the Talmud has a whole maseches Moed Katan, my cotton's all the laws of Chol HaMoed, which spells out all in detail all halachas. So the Gemara asks a question in Chagiga, Maseches Chagiga, the Gemara raises a question, where did they get all this from? Where did the rabbis and the Mishnah, the rabbis of the Talmud get all these rules and regulations from? There's mamish nothing in Chumash. Yontif at least says there's a pasuk, Oichal Nefesh, and other things. You can derive all the laws of Yontif from the Pesukim of Chumash. Where did they derive all the principles of Chol HaMoed? So the Gemara says, you're right. There's no way to derive it from the Chumash. The expression the Talmud uses is, Lo Mesara HaKosuf Ela LaChachamim. The Torah left it up to the Chachamim to determine what the nature of the laws of Chol HaMoed should be. So what exactly does that mean, Lo Mesara HaKosuf Ela LaChachamim? So there's a dispute among the Rishonim regarding the prohibition of doing Malach on Chol HaMoed, whether Malach is Chol HaMoed is a Din D'Oraisa or it's a Din D'Rabbanan. Tosfos in the end of the first Perek in Avodah Zarah has this Machlokes on Daf Chaf Aleph. So one opinion in Rishonim is that Malach is Chol HaMoed is only the Rabbanan. And that's what it means. That's what the expression means in the Talmud. Lo Mesara HaKosuv El Olach HaChamim. The Kosuv means the Tanakh. The Torah left it up to the rabbis. If they want to invent a Din D'Rabbanan, be my guest. So Rabbi Shalom said, want to make up a Din D'Rabbanan, make up. So they made up Dinim D'Rabbanan, and all the laws of Chol HaMoed from the beginning to the end are only D'Rabbanan. But that's not the accepted opinion. In the Shulchan Aruch, we paskin that all the laws of Chol HaMoed are, not all the laws, some of the laws of Chol HaMoed, some are clearly D'Rabbanan, but some of the laws of Chol HaMoed, some of the prohibitions, Isurim Melacha Chol HaMoed, are Isurim D'Oraisa. But where, what is it based on? Which one of the Midrash HaTorah Nidreshes meant? No, you're not using any Midrash over here. So the Gemara has a new concept. The Mesara HaKosuf Ela LaChachamim is also a Din D'Oraisa. The Torah writes things sometimes in a vague fashion, and it leaves it up to the Chachamim to determine what the Din should be, not based on any Psukim, not based on any Midrash HaTorah Nidreshes meant, based on what they think, based on what they see fit, the way they think they should pass in the Din. Whatever they think should be included, they can come up with new concepts, and these concepts were developed by the Tanoim. So the Chazon Ish would say that such a category of halacha, la mesara hakosuf, ela lachachamim, would have to have been determined before the year 240. That would have to be developed during the Shnei Alafim Torah. You can't come up with such a new concepts in Malachas Chol HaMoed after the year 240. Whatever concepts are there, we're still working on. Bizman Hazel was trying, we're developing, trying to understand what are the Hilchas Chol HaMoed. And in every generation, the Chachamim have a right to interpret what it says in the Talmud the way they see fit. But we can't come up with new, we can't change the laws in the Talmud after the year 240, whatever. Before the year 240, in every generation, they can change whatever they want. They can come up with new things. They can, new Midrash HaTorah Nidreshes meant, say whatever they want. But after the year 240, they couldn't do that. Now, last week we raised a question. We raised a lot of questions that we still didn't answer. We're going to have to try to work out all the answers based on passages in the Talmud. We raised a question that's raised in Shulchan Aruch. If the Ramah writes in Chosh Mishpan and Simen Chofei that if the scholars in the 1550s, when he lived, if they're convinced that the rabbis in the year 900 made a mistake, the Gaon made a mistake, so he recommends you should consult with other rabbis. Maybe you don't know what you're talking about, but if you consult with other scholars and they all think that you're right and you convince everybody that the scholars from the year 900, 1000 made a mistake, so you're paskin against the Gaon and Mefartik. So if the Amoraim have a right to disagree with the Tanoim, and the Achronim who lived in the 1500s and later have a right to disagree with the Gaonim who lived before the days of Rashi and Tosfos, so why can't we today disagree with the Chachmei HaTalmud? If someone doesn't agree with what it says in the Tanoim and Amoraim, why can't you disagree? We're not coming up with any new halachic categories, we're just discussing details, certain details. So we think it makes more sense the other way. There's a certain professor, he's already up in Olam HaEmes. He used to teach in Dropsy College in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So he wrote the essays in Hebrew on Talmud. So he has in one of his humorous essays, he didn't intend them to be humorous, but when yeshiva students read them, they think they're, I read it on Purim. That's so funny. I read it on Purim just to get a good laugh. So he has in one of his essays, he quotes a discussion from the Talmud, and he says, "V'zeh nirali doichek." He thinks that that's a gekvetched pshat. "V'nirali loyman." He thinks he's giving his own interpretation. That's like a joke. What the rabbis of the Talmud say is a doichek, and he's going to give a better pshat than the Mishnah. He's going to give a better pshat than the Chumash. So the question is, why can't we say like that? Why can't people in the later generations disagree with what it says in the Talmud? So the Ramon Chosh Mishpat says, no, that's the cutoff point. You can't disagree with what it says in the Talmud. Why not? He doesn't explain why not. So the Vilna Gaon in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch on Chayshim Mishpat, quotes a line from the Gemara in Bava Metzia. I'm taking it out of context. I'm not distorting, I'm taking it out of context. We're going to have to talk about the whole picture a little later. It has to do with the story of Rabbi Akiva, with Moshe Rabbeinu listening to Rabbi Akiva. We'll get to it maybe next week or the week after. So the Vilna Gaon takes a line out of the Gemara there in the middle of a long story. Ravina v'Ravashi sofaro. That Ravina v'Ravashi with the end of the paskening on Torah Shebal Peh. So he says that means that you can't disagree with the later generations cannot disagree with Ravina v'Ravashi. What exactly does that represent? Why is that so? Why should that be so? So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik gave the following interpretation. He thought what it means is the following. There is a famous Igeres Rabbeinu Shrei Gaon. Shrei Gaon was one of the Gaonim who lived before the days of Rashi and Tosfos. So Rav Shrei Gaon was asked, they used to ask the Gaonim questions in Halacha, questions in Hashkof, and questions in history. So he asked them, how did we receive the Torah today? What's the historical tradition of the Torah? So he starts giving a whole elaboration. Moshe Rabbeinu gives the beginning of Pirkei Avos. Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misinai, Misarli Yeshua, goes Vaita, Tanoim, Amorim. And then he gives you the whole background, how he received the Torah, and that's how he knows the Torah is authentic, and he's teaching the Torah. So there's a famous Igeres Rabbeinu Shrei Gaon, and there on one line in the Igeres Rabbeinu Shrei Gaon, there are two versions. It's a crucial line. There are two versions as to what he said. When Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi edited the Mishnayos, that's what it says in the Talmud. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, what is the one who edited the Mishnayos? What does that mean? He edited, and from that time on, they published it. They didn't have printing presses, but then everybody studied Mishnayos from a written text? Oh no, he edited the Mishnayos and it was still transmitted Baal Peh. The Torah Shebaal Peh had to be transmitted Baal Peh. They didn't begin to teach from a written text until the days of Ravina Ravashi, which was the end of the period, roughly the end of the period of the Amoraim. So there are two versions in the Igeres of the Rav Shrei Gaon. When did they stop teaching Torah Shebaal Peh, Baal Peh, and when did they start teaching it Mitoch HaKzav, from a text? The generally accepted opinion, I think, in the last 200 years, both among the historical scholars and among the Chachamim and among the Rabbanim, is that the Torah Shebaal Peh was still being transmitted Baal Peh, even after Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi edited the Mishnayos, it was still being transmitted Baal Peh until the days of Ravina Ravashi, and that's the time, after the days of the Amoraim, that's when everybody started teaching the Torah Shebaal Peh Mitoch HaKzav.
And of Midrash.
Okay, maybe we'll get to that at a later point. Good? Okay, it's a good point to keep in mind. So just to explain this point, the Torah Shebaal Peh was originally given to Moshe Rabbeinu Har Sinai. I think we mentioned the pasuk in the end of Parshas Kisisa, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, "Ksav l'cha es hadvarim ha'ele," write down the Torah Shebichsav. Despite the fact, ki sometimes means because and sometimes means despite the fact. The word ki has many different meanings in biblical Hebrew. Ki al pi hadvarim ha'ele karati itcha bris v'esiso. Despite the fact that the main kris is bris with the Jewish people, the main covenant is going to be on the Torah Shebaal Peh, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want you to record the Torah Shebichsav. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them, ksav l'cha es hadvarim ha'ele, write down the Torah Shebichsav, and I want the Torah Shebichsav to be transmitted bichsav. That the Baal Kori, when he lays Kriyas HaTorah Shul, is not allowed to say the Psuk in Baal Peh. Let's say the Bar Mitzvah Bochur knows the whole parasha by heart. He's not allowed to say it by heart and just look in to make sure he doesn't make a mistake. He has to read every word, Mitoch HaKzav. The Torah Shebichsav must be transmitted to others, Bichsav. And the Torah Shebaal Peh has to be transmitted Baal Peh. You're not allowed to put it Bichsav. So how come today we're all studying from books? How come everybody's studying from printed Mishnayos and Gemaras and Shulchan Aruch? So the Talmud says that we have a pasuk that says Es Lasis Hashem Efer Teresecha. If you have a big shas atchak, you have no choice. Sometimes you have to violate the laws of the Torah. So they had no choice. They had to write down the Torah Shebaal Peh because they were afraid that everything was going to be forgotten. That's a simple reading of the Gemara. That is a special heter bisman hazeh, and we're really all in violation of this din. The Torah Shebaal Peh should really be transmitted Baal Peh. But what can we do? We have no breire. If we're going to transmit it Baal Peh, everything will be forgotten. You look in the Rambam never quotes the din. And the whole Yad HaChazaka, the Rambam quotes all the dinim derais, all the dinim derabban, and it gives you the historical changes until a certain point we observe the din like this, and then it changed. He never quotes this din. This halacha, that the Torah Shebaal Peh has to be transmitted Baal Peh, he only writes in the introduction to the Yad HaChazaka. When he's giving you the Seder HaMasorah, when he gives you the Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, to Yeshua, to the Zkenim, to the Nevi'im, and so on and so forth. So he only writes this, the Torah Shebaal Peh, had to be transmitted Baal Peh in the introduction. And he never writes it in the Halachas. So it would appear from the Rambam that he holds that it's not really a prohibition. He understood that the Gemara is just saying, it's not that we're all in violation of an Avera today, but we have no choice, because otherwise the Torah Shebaal Peh will be forgotten. The Pshat, the Rambam seems to, that's how Rav Moshe Soloveitchik understood. The Rambam seems to have understood that this is not a prohibition. It just means like this. When you transmit the Torah Shebaal Peh, Baal Peh, that's the main Masorah, when it's transmitted Baal Peh. When you're going to have public lectures with a teaching with Mitoch HaKsav, see, this course doesn't have any text, so this is real Torah Shebaal Peh. This is really being transmitted Baal Peh. And the yeshiva is, when we study from a text, we read from a Gemara, from a Rambam, from a Shulchan Aruch, we're teaching everything innovating inside. So that's a lower level of transmitting Torah Shebaal Peh. Transmitting Torah Shebaal Peh, Mitoch HaKsav, it's a lower level. But it's not that you're in violation of an Avera. The fullest, the transmission of the Torah Shebaal Peh in its fullest sense, the fullest sense of Masorah is supposed to be when it's transmitted Baal Peh. The Rambam, when you look in the introduction to the Arach HaZokeh, the Rambam gives you all the generations from Moshe Rabbeinu till Ravina, Ravashi, and he stops. He doesn't give you later. The Meiri, when he has his commentary on Pirkei Avos, on the first Mishnah, writes, Moshe Kibbutz Torah Misinai, he goes till Ravina, Ravashi, like the Rambam, and then he continues to say, Ravina, Ravashi gave it to this one, that one, that one, that, and I got it from my father, got it from this one, and he gives you all the way till himself. Why didn't the Rambam came before the Meiri, why didn't the Rambam, who also knew the secrets, it's all in the Geres Reb Sheri going, why didn't the Rambam write the whole Seder HaMasorah till himself, till he got the Torah from his father, who got it from the Rima Gash, who got it from the Rif, who got it from this one, got it from that one. He could have also done the same as the Meiri. The answer is the Rambam is not writing a history book, the Rambam is writing Halacha. The Rambam holds that the full Seder HaMasorah ended by Ravina Ravashi. When they started teaching Torah Shebichsav, Torah Shebaal Peh, Mitoch HaKsav, there was a lower level of Torah Shebaal Peh, lower level of Masorah of Torah Shebaal Peh. So the Vilna Gaon apparently understood that the statement that the Gemara made, Ravina Ravashi, so far the Gemara in Bava Metzia and Daf Peivav, Ravina Ravashi, with the end of the period, the end of the tradition of Horo means the Paskin, means that the Chachamim who come later cannot disagree with the Chachamim who came before, because until the days of Ravina Ravashi, the Torah Shebaal Peh was still being transmitted Baal Peh. It's not that in the later generations there were even Avera. It just means in the earlier generations the Masorah was in the fullest sense. It was the fullest tradition of the Masorah of the Torah Shebaal Peh. In the later generations, it's on a lower level of Masorah because they're teaching in the classes in public, Mitoch HaKsav. So those who have a lower level of Bali Masorah have no right to disagree with those who have a higher level of Bali Masorah. Everybody from the days of Yeshua ben Nun until Rabbeinu Avashi, they were bigger geniuses, they were greater scholars, greater tzaddikim, different levels of, no two people are on the same level, but al pi halacha, they were all on the same level of Chachmei HaMasorah. They were all being transmitted Torah Shebaal Peh, Baal Peh. From the days of Rabbeinu Avashi on also, the different people on different levels of intelligence and Yirah Shamayim and Tzidkis and so on, but al pi din, everybody from the times of Rabbeinu Avashi on, all the Talmid HaChachamim are on the same level. They're all in the lower level of transmitting of the Torah Shebaal Peh. So that's how the Vilna Gaon apparently understood the statement in the Gemara, that it's not just a historical statement, but it's a halachic statement. Ravina Bravashi, Sof Haroah can only, we already discussed, Haroah is only on Torah Shebaal Peh. So the full transmission of the Torah Shebaal Peh has to be when it's transmitted Baal Peh. So the cutoff point was Ravina Bravashi. That's why we assume that the Chachamim who came after Rabbeinu Avashi may not disagree, have no right to disagree with those who preceded. We have to elaborate much more on this. As I mentioned earlier, that I have to run to get a plane, so I'm gonna run out now. But believe me, next week we're gonna come back to the topic. We're gonna discuss it much more.